He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday. It's Wednesday already, the midweek version of today's Best Stocks Now show. Or will it be Best Inverse Fund? Looks like Best Stocks Now are going to probably rule the day here so far. The futures were down all morning, but we've got a pretty decent gain in the market right now with the Dow up 85 points. That puts the Dow at 31,217. But, you know, these early morning rallies haven't been all of that sustainable here recently. They've been dropping. Yesterday, I think we were up at one point in time and ended down quite a bit. The NASDAQ is up 58. It was up more. It was up about 90 not too long ago. Now it's up 74, 50, 58 actually. At 11,603, the S&P's up 12 points to 39.19. You've got crude oil down $3.45. That tells me recession fear. Crude is at 83.43, down 4% today. Gold is flat on the day. Silver's up 15 cents. The euro below parity. It's at 99. This is the euro versus the dollar. We've got a little bit of a drop in interest rates today. The 10-year is down 6 basis points now to 3.28. And Bitcoin is under 19,000 right now. You've got Bitcoin at $18,854. It's down $869 per coin today. So a lot of risk off, a lot of mixed messages in the market today. So welcome to the Wednesday version of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here as usual with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. We got a lot to talk about today. A lot of cross currents in the world taking place. We did not have a good day to start a new week yesterday. The Dow was down 173 yesterday. The NASDAQ was down 86. And Barry, the NASDAQ has been down every single day since the Jackson Hole speech. That's not good.
Well, it's working exactly like Jerome Powell.
Yeah, it's working like a charm, right?
According to the Fed, right?
According to Jerome Powell, who maybe saw a little bit of excess, a little bit of froth, a little bit of speculation, certainly put a halt to it. And like I say, the NASDAQ's down 7 straight days. We'll see if
Bitcoin with an 18 handle this morning.
Yes.
So I don't know where it is at the moment. But, yeah, 18,853 is the last trade for Bitcoin. And it's been in that 19 to 20,000 range, but it's down now.
Not anymore.
Now in the 18 range.
And I do own a little bit of Bitty. Just a little bit of Bitty. Bitty is the only inverse fund out there, ETF, brought to you by ProShares, that is inverse the Bitcoin. Also, you know, there's been a big spike in rates since the speech. We're down a little bit today, but we hit 3.33 yesterday, or 3.34, and the two-year, you can get 3.48 on a two-year. Treasury, which isn't bad, okay, but it's unusual. It's not usual to have the two-year yielding more than the 10-year. That's an inverted yield curve. It's not quite the gap that we saw earlier this year when we had about a 52 basis point gap. Now it's just a 14 point base, but it is inverted. Still suggesting that a recession is more likely than not out there at some point. Of course, we're already in a two-quarter negative GDP type of recession. And rates are coming down a little bit today. That is helping the markets. Yesterday, as I looked through the market, I spent a long day after a three-day weekend. I went through all 6,000. I basically scroll through my my spreadsheet vertically, usually in alphabetical order, and anything that's ranked is a B-plus or better, I have a look at. Anything I own, I have a look at. I've got certain bellwether stocks that I have a look at. And, of course, I look at everything that I own on a daily basis. So it keeps me really on top of things so that I can be, vigilant on what we own, vigilant on anything that might be moving. I look for areas of the market, you know, that might be moving together in unison. The only thing I saw yesterday, three things. The tech looks terrible, okay? Doesn't look, well, you know what? That goes for almost every stock in the market right now. The only thing that looked good yesterday were the shippers. Frontline had a really big day. Nordic American Tankers, Euronav, Seikos Energy. And I think that's all due to the shutdown of the pipeline. Because the only other way to get liquid natural gas to Europe is using what they currently have in the way of liquid natural gas supplies, which I don't think it's very much. I don't think they supply themselves with much because they were very, very dependent on Putin's pipeline. I don't know if they've let their natural gas just kind of stay in the ground and haven't been, drilling for it recently. But so that really is putting pressure on the shipping stocks like Frontline, Nordic American Tankers, Euronav, Seikos. And there was a big upgrade yesterday by Jefferies on that group. And the only other sector that I'm seeing any good, positive action in is the solar, which obviously is longer duration, longer term. I don't see solar coming to the rescue of Europe with, winter around the corner. But, America did pass the big climate bill. That's giving a boost to solar. And solar is looking, any alternative, wind and solar, looking at as an alternative where possible. To help out in supplying energy. Europe's going to have to shut down a lot of their factories. We talked about this yesterday. They're going to have to ration energy, who's going to get the energy? Are the factories that make the stuff that's so necessary? We were reading yesterday about BASF company in Germany, which is a huge conglomerate, everything from agricultural products, ammonia, food, chemicals, massive conglomerate. And they were talking about, we're just not going to be able to produce a lot of the things that we normally produce because we've got to cut back on energy. And, of course, then it gets down to the individual homes and whatnot. So, I don't know. There's a lot that's got to be worked out in Europe. They were scrambling to fill their reserves. And Putin shut down what was left of the pipeline movement from 50. It was at 20%. He's gone to zero. And I don't know if he's going to turn it back on. And nobody can guess. But he said, well, when you release the sanctions on me, I'll turn it back on. But then again, he may just be using that as a leverage right now. We did get a report out of China this morning. That also kind of goes overlooked as the weakness of the Chinese economy. Their exports for August missed forecast. But let's not forget, China is still doing lockdowns. They're not getting a lot of news or press, but it's happening.
They've got roughly 30 million people locked down between two cities at the moment. I was watching watching that this morning, and then talking about energy trading. In Europe, their energy trading markets are having some issues in terms of derivatives, margin calls, because of the fact that price swings are in both directions. Are swinging vastly, and so trying to plan ahead and hedge right for power usage is causing margin calls and everything there.
Well, look at Equinor. Equinor. When we come back, I want you to talk just a little about how Equinor has caught up in that. It's down 6.7% today. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, let's try to make some sense of what's going on in the European energy trading markets. Okay, this really has nothing to do with the physical trading. This has to do with the contracts and the derivatives. So European energy trading risk will be grinding to a halt unless governments extend liquidity to cover margin calls of at least $1.5 trillion. Okay, so this is no small problem on Tuesday. As the continent's energy crisis sucks up capital to guarantee trades amid wild price swings, the issue is focused on derivatives trading while the physical market is functioning. Equinor Senior Vice President Helge Hagenein said at the Gas Tech Conference in Milan. He added that the company's $1.5 trillion estimate to prop up paper trading is conservative. Many companies are finding it increasingly difficult to manage margin calls, which is forcing utilities to secure multi-billion-dollar euro credit lines as rising interest rates add to cost. This is just capital that is dead and tied up in margin calls, Hagen told Bloomberg. If the companies need to put up that much money, that means liquidity in the market dries up, and this is not good for this part of the gas markets, adding that EU plans to intervene would be sensible for derivatives trading. Among emergency interventions being discussed by the EU are price caps in power and gas markets, which Hagen is for, but he says putting a price cap on gas would be extremely difficult due to the global nature of the market. Now, Barry, let's translate this to one of our holdings.
Let's make this as simple as possible.
Yes, that's pretty complicated stuff. Equinor was down just a little yesterday, but today it's down 6.61%, as it seems to be kind of in the middle of all of this. Okay, now put it into layman's terms.
Yeah, and the main point is they're pointing it out, right? So they're as an energy company and utility in Europe, they're vying right for some type of intervention. And you've heard this for a couple of weeks now, where the way the European energy market is set up and priced is essentially broken. It's just not built for the type of volatility they've seen. And so, for example, you take over the last 2 weeks, a week or so ago, you had futures on energy and gas, fell as much as 21%. The week before, it was up 40%, right? And so, it's really a volatility issue, because if you're, think of it, if you're a power company, or if you're a big company using power, you're gonna, you know, you hedge those costs ahead of time, right, to know what, you know, what your costs are going to be. So then you can, you know, price your other, you know, the product that you're, you know, making using that energy on the back end correctly, because you know what your input costs are. But the problem has been with this huge volatility, the amount of, you know, essentially, you know, money that you have to back that derivative or that that hedging purpose, right, it has grown, you know, immensely, right, where it used to, let's say it used to maybe only, you know, only cost you so much to back, say, a particular contract. Well, when that volatility, right, increases, well, then you need to put, you know, you need to put up more money, because the chance of, you know, you getting a big margin call is more because of volatility's increase. So essentially they're asking, you know, they've gone through some, you know, some of these companies, I know German companies gone through, you know, basically like a $9 billion credit line in a very short period of time, and I think the company's only worth $4 billion, right? It's not that they lost the money. It's the fact that they just don't have enough money. They don't have the money to put up, you know, to back these contracts. And so, essentially, it's really a broken, you know, market. We think of, you know, you think of like a, you know, just a trading market. And so they need some money, or change the rules, right, in which to operate in, because it wasn't built for this type of volatility.
Well, that was going to be my next suggestion, is they could lower the amount of money that's got to be put up.
Right, and it's not losses. You know, it's not like they're it's not like no. We think of, you know, a trading margin call where somebody, hey, I'm on this side of the trade and they got it wrong, way wrong, right, and you know that money's going to go poof. In this instance, it's really just the amount of capital that they need to, you know, back whatever, you know, whatever trade or whatever they're doing, just in terms of, you know, offsetting, you know, I'm giving power here, I've got to borrow power here, because power companies, you know, sometimes they need, you know, they're not producing enough power, say, that their customers need. Well, they have to buy it from another region, for example. And so it's just it's really just a broken market. And I've heard it, you know, kind of Europe speak. We've actually heard, you know, some of the as the UK Prime Minister was getting, you know, getting close to being named. You heard a lot about the how energies and price caps and how those things are. It's much more of a market function there than it is here. I mean, we haven't, you know, our power bills certainly haven't moved as much as you look at Europe, and that's because, you know, part of that's because of the way they price their power versus here. It's a much more highly, surprisingly enough, it's more regulated here than it is in Europe. Most things are more regulated in Europe than they are here. So.
Well, you know, Equinor is a very essential cog in the wheel in Europe. It's a $115 billion company. I mean, it's their Exxon Mobil.
Yeah, and they're unique because they're actually the bridge, right, from, you know, gas, for example, and then they do a lot of renewable, you know, yep, renewable energy. So they're very, they're kind of on the cutting edge of a lot of Europe's power. And you know, they're really just pointing out, hey, this is what we kind of see, how much this needs to be shored up, and you know, and you guys need to do something about it. So they're really the ones that are kind of, you know, pointing it out and saying, hey, let's do, you know, you guys got to do some work here.
And the reason the stock is down 6.5% here has got to be because, you know, I mean, traders fear that they would have to answer the margin call, right? And
well,
not have the money to do it.
Yeah, well, in other words, they've got to put up more capital. Well, if they have to put up more capital, they don't have as much capital, say, to build, you know, more wind farms, or they don't
right.
get, you know, capital to do other things with it. So in other words, it's tied up because it's just sitting there because it has to back some, you know, trade or market that they're, you know, that they're, you know, product that they're selling, essentially. So,
well, it almost seems to me like somebody, they're going to work out something, because this,
yeah, exactly.
This is the lifeline. Okay. And so, I mean, with Equinor being down 6.5% today, as soon as some kind of lifeline is announced, you would think you would see a pretty good rally back
right.
in the stock, but you never know. Okay, there's obviously a high degree of risk involved here with the stock being down that much. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about why oil's down 334. per barrel today, and then get into a lot of individual stocks in the second half. This is Bill Gunderson of Prairie Time. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. The S&P is now up 22 points. The Nasdaq's up 67. And the Dow has got a little more wind behind its back. It's up about 150 or so far. So the markets, can they break a seven-day losing streak in the Nasdaq? We'll see. Okay, now at the same time, as we've got this issue in Europe on the derivatives, we have a drop in oil today, $3.33. That generally comes about on a couple of things. One, the lockdowns in China. Okay? You're not using a lot of oil when you're locked down in your condo or your apartment, 30 million people that would generally be driving to work, working at the factory, et cetera, flying, you know, around the country, whatever. And so that is one thing. And that weak print out of China this morning, probably. There's always, you know, normally when there's weakness, you can always say fear of a global recession. Okay, that's kind of a pat answer. And that would be the pat answer, I would say, today is why is oil down? Fear of a global recession, okay? And that it's as simple as that, because if we were to go into a deep recession in Europe, China, and America, obviously there would be less oil used. So, you know, we'll see. Yesterday you had a little bit of a lift in oil because OPEC Plus said that they're going to cut the barrel production. It was like 100,000 barrels a day. It wasn't much, but it was still a cut. And that sent oil up a little bit. Then it kind of faded. So now it's just kind of a seesaw battle between demand. How much demand? Is demand going to drop? Is there enough supply to meet the demand? What if demand remains the same? Those are going to be the questions every day.
Well, when you got China, I mean, they're getting closer and closer to their to their you know, congressional meeting, I think is in about a month now. So they are those exports you mentioned came in around that mid 7% range. Those are normally in that 13 to 14% range, I think, the month before. So, you know, it goes to show you that they've really those, you know, COVID zeros really kind of hit them hard. And they're going to, and there's a chance that after that, you know, after she gets reelected, right? Well, quote unquote reelected, that, yes, you know, that they'll, you know, potentially be a lot more lax on COVID. So we'll see, you know, where that goes. And, you know, if they fully open up and run on all cylinders, they act like, you know, the way their government's set up, it is kind of like flipping a switch where they can turn the economy back on real fast. Well, then, you know, maybe that demand picks back up. I don't know.
Goldman Sachs recently came out with the prediction of oil getting back to $125 per barrel. And there was about three other firms. That was about 2 weeks ago. They were all bullish on oil. So it just seems to me like this, all of a sudden these shutdowns in China, that's a temporary thing.
Well, and at some point we got to begin to refill the strategic petroleum reserve.
That's going down a lot.
It's the lowest that it's, I mean, it's a low, I was reading something, it's, you know, essentially the lowest it's been essentially ever, you know, except when we started it. So it's, you know, they've got, you know, you've got to add back to that at some point. I mean,
unless they're going to just drain it. I don't know. I hope not.
Yeah.
But maybe after the election, right? Because gasoline prices have definitely come down considerably because we're releasing a million barrels a day.
And it's supposed to end, remember, at the towards the end of October, surprisingly enough.
Yes, right before the elections.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, okay. Now, you know that I talk about and focus on earnings, and especially earnings expectations a lot. In fact, that's my number one macro indicator. And I've been saying in my newsletter, okay, I think the multiple's probably contracted about as far as it's going to contract unless we get a huge run up in the 10-year yield, which is now at 3.28. But I've been worried about the earnings estimates being too high. Now here's this adds a little bit of credence to what I've been saying. This comes out from Credit Suisse. They say energy is the lone exception as earnings estimates see a meaningful decline. All right. Okay. Now that, and you know, it's not so much earnings that the market trades on, past earnings. It's forward expectations, and Credit Suisse. And I've seen this. I've seen this in the numbers. The next two quarters. We're currently in quarter three of 2022. I've seen a pretty big decline to the estimates for this quarter. I've seen a pretty sizable decline for the next quarter. And I've seen it affect just a little bit the annual expectations for next year, which I don't think are getting a lot of attention yet. I mean, they're mostly concerned about the next two quarters. But recession concerns and weak guidance have resulted in a meaningful decline in Q3 and 2023 estimates, okay, for the S&P 500. So since mid-June, bottom-up earnings estimates for Q3 have fallen 5.5%, and estimates for next year, 3.7%. I mean, that's not really meaningful in those annual estimates. If you're looking at $225 per share, 3.7 would be, what, $6 or something like that? Yeah, it takes a little bit out of it. But this is kind of a trend that is worrisome here. I think that the estimates out there on the street for the overall S&P 500, you know, I was out in front of the S&P, of the analyst on the way up, with higher estimates than they had and a higher target price. They eventually caught up with us because the consensus estimate is an average. It takes a long time to move an average. And I think right now that they're a little bit too high for next year, their estimates. And I think you got to be out in front of that with lower estimates. And of course, I do a lot of work on the individual companies in the S&P 500. So if I were you, I would follow along every week that macro outlook for the market, because that number, that estimate for next year and the year after that, that holds the key to the future of the S&P 500.
Well, and the strong dollars is certainly going to be a big headwind for your multinational companies, because you know, your currency translation, bringing those, you know, those euros that they make overseas and then converting them into dollars, well, they're converting into West dollars at this point. So
yes, and I see that in today. Some people I really respect. I was on CNBC a few times with Peter Buchvar. He's a fellow Scandinavian. I think he's from Sweden or whatnot. But anyways, he's saying that a strong dollar and economic concerns are weighing on tech, because tech sells, you know, outside of the U.S. And I also see that another firm here is advising clients to avoid companies that sell overseas for that very reason. Because when they bring those dollars back to America, they take a big hit in converting the money back to U.S. dollars. So that's another reason you're seeing earnings estimates coming down. I look at that dollar, UUP, every single day. I've never seen it as strong as it is, and I just saw that the pound in England just hit a new low against the dollar, a 40-year low.
$1.14. Yeah.
Oh my God!
And then, of course, the euro's under a dollar at the moment.
So that's not good. It makes their goods more competitive on the world markets, but it makes our goods less competitive, and our multinational companies that produce and sell overseas, it's hitting them too. So
haggis is getting cheap, right?
So how can you be passive when you've got all of these cross currents in the world? A strong U.S. dollar, okay, rising interest rates, a pipeline that right now is shut off in Europe. You have to be a little bit active, I think. Well, maybe I'm biased in today's world, but it just seems logical to me. Okay, well, you can look at the newsletter last week where my target price is on the S&P 500. Go to the website at GundersonCapital.com. We'll be right back.
You gotta go where you wanna go.
Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. You know, I'm having a hard time finding any leadership in the market today. The Nasdaq's up 54, but I don't see the usual, Microsoft, AMD, NVIDIA, the software companies. I don't see any leadership there. In fact, it seems to be all biotechs that are kind of leading the upside, which is not a very good indication of a quality move in the NASDAQ. And the only other area of leadership that I see is a little bit in the solar sector. Not seeing any leadership anywhere else. Energy, technology, you would think so with the NASDAQ up 56, but I'm not seeing it other than biotechs, which obviously carry a high degree of risk, and the green energy. Okay, so let me give you a few examples here. In the biotech area, GKOS, Glaukos Corporation. This is another one that's working on macular degeneration. There seems to be a lot of good news lately coming from that area of the market. And GKOS had some good news today on one of their products, drugs in the pipeline. This is definitely one of the leading biotechs in that area, but obviously it carries a high degree of risk. That's all it takes is a rejection or a failure of the trials, and they get clobbered. But this stock's been around for quite a while. It's been as low as 13. It's been as high as 100. Now it's at 55. They're up 14.9% today, GKOS. There's a retail stock that's done pretty well over the years, Academy Sports, which is sporting goods. You know, there seem to be about four or five retailers, Barry. I'm going to say Ulta Beauty, okay, that one has been a stalwart. Academy Sports, Dick's Sporting Goods, and to some extent, Lululemon. Those seem to be the ones that buck the trend of online sales, crushing bricks and mortar.
And Lululemon's done a good job of blending in. They've got a pretty significant men's line now. When starting out years and years ago, right, it was just essentially just yoga pants, and not too many males were running around in yoga pants
No.
back then. But they've really kind of reinvented themselves. They probably made a bad purchase on that mirror company, but other than that, you know, they've been a very, very well-run company, certainly since they had that fabric issue from, I don't know, six or so years ago. Yeah,
see-through.
On accident.
The guys didn't say anything for several years. And then Academy Sports, ASO, is pretty good. Company out of Texas and very fast growing. We owned it at one time. It's been growing. They've been growing their earnings by 111% over the last 5 years. That's their annual. When you do a compound average growth rate, and they reported earnings that were better than expected. It's up 12.8% today. And then also kind of in retail, I talked to a guy who's in the retail gas station business, a nationwide chain. He's very knowledgeable in that area, and we had a discussion about converting over to electric vehicles and what the gas station's plans are and everything like that. And at the end, his final statement was, whoever wins the energy storage race will be a big winner. Well, we own a little bit of Fluence Energy, which is FLNC, which is out of Arlington, Virginia. They provide energy storage products, services, and digital applications for renewables and storage applications. So, for instance, you know, you see these commercials for Generac, and something happens and the lights go out and the Generac generator comes on and, you know, they're back to normal life just like that. But you can also buy storage units for your solar that store up so you have more capacity than just, you know, what's there, you know, in the charge. You have these storage units that you're also keeping charged, so you have more backup, which would be, you know, could be an answer for a part of the answer to the electric cars at some point in time. So we do own Fluence Energy, which has not made any money yet, but they seem to be a leader, FLNC. They went public in 2021. And that's pretty good chart on that stock. It's up 6% today. It's a $3.3 billion small cap company. So obviously there's added risk. So once again, you know, the main news today in the markets seems to be revolving around energy, whether it's solar, whether it's nuclear, whether it's liquid natural gas, whether it's derivatives thereof, whether it's lockdowns in China. And there just doesn't seem to be much else other than biotechs. But, hey, we'll take it. If we can end the seven-day losing streak in the NASDAQ and get the Dow turned around. I did see that they were hitting a little bit of support levels this morning. Not real strong ones, but there was some support levels where the markets opened up today. And they are bouncing off of those support levels right now. Well, I've got a busy day ahead. I'm going to go through the database again, see what I can find. Yesterday, I found nothing. Okay, fruitless effort. But it's not fruitless. It's just as important to know there's nothing as it is to know that there's something out there. We're always on the lookout and vigilant, of course, on those that we do own. If you'd like to talk to us, man, I continue to put new money to work. People coming to us, I've done that ever since I've been in the business. You can set up an appointment with us at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST, a virtual appointment from your lazy boy to our lazy boy. Oh, I'm just kidding. We've got a lot of hard workers here at Gunderson Capital Management. If you'd like to get the newsletter and sample it, go to GundersonCapital.com, GundersonCapital.com for 2 free weeks. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.